And we're live. Welcome to the Lakers Outsiders. I ditched all the outsiders. I said, to hell with all of you. Enjoy your summers. Go out there. I'm basically Kobe Bryanting everybody. I'm not talking to any of my teammates. So I brought in two of my favorite national or other writers from all around the blogosphere, Adam Morris and Court Zirk. Adam covers all kinds of aspects of the NBA, Nylon Calculus, Denver Stiffs, Hardwood Paroxysm. How are you doing, Adam?
Great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime, anytime. And then also we have Court, my fellow Rant Sports alumnus. You cover the NBA at large for FanRag, and then you cover more specifically Denver, the Nuggets, for today's Fast Break. How are you holding up?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks for having me on.
Again, anytime. You guys are welcome anytime. Adam and I guess before we get going into the meat of the conversation, but Adam and I, we were both fortunate enough to be at the NBA Summer League. Adam, after you know, a few beers and stuff, you and I both agreed that that was one of the better weekends that we've ever had, right?
And that was an awesome time. A few beers is probably an understatement. I think we went till about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
but that's what's so cool about Summer League. There was, you know, dozens of riders at that night at the SB Nation house. I don't know, there was a dozen or so people hanging out till 4 in the morning just talking hoops. It was fun.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my wife gets ready for work at about 5:30 in the morning, and she was laughing at me because 2 days in a row I was getting back to my hotel and calling her as I was going to sleep, and she was getting ready to leave for work. But
good time, man.
It was awesome. It was really cool to just kind of, I mean, the networking thing is one thing or whatever, but just to talk with a whole bunch of people, you know, it's like it was this podcast times about five, because there were so many people that were knowledgeable about the game that just wanted to talk about it forever.
Sure. It was the easiest type of networking, because all you're doing is just being yourself and talking to people about hoops, and they're doing the same, so it was cool.
Yeah, we got to get you out there soon, Court. We really missed you out there this past weekend, or that weekend.
I was going to say, I hate you both. I caught the Summer League games on NBA TV, but I had three kids hanging off my legs trying to fend them off. It's hard to pay attention to the game sometimes.
we just had Fear the Swords guy hanging on our legs, you know, during the conversation. So, poor Ryan. I'm just kidding, Ryan. If you're watching, which you probably aren't, you were awesome out there. But so I guess we'll just go ahead and jump into the actual reason we're here to talk about this. As I mentioned earlier, both Adam and Court have done a lot of work for, you know, the Denver Nuggets. They're both based, I believe, out of the Colorado area. Are you both in Denver?
Yeah, I'm in a suburb of Denver, just real close.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Adam,
same.
Are you same kind of situation? You guys have grown up, I'd imagine, Denver Nuggets fans. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I was I was born and raised here, so I've been a Nuggets fan my whole life, through everything that entails.
I always say I'm much more of an NBA fan than I am a Nuggets fan. I started following them a lot closer in 2003 when they got Melo. I'm also the same age as Melo, so it's kind of it was kind of a motivation to start watching Denver more. But I'm more of an NBA fan, I'd say, than a Nuggets fan.
Well, you know, there's those in every fan base. But so I wanted to start then with the, you know, Nuggets and Lakers rivalry. You mentioned Carmelo Anthony. You guys very nearly, you know, denied the Lakers of one of their championships when the Lakers and the Nuggets played in the conference finals. We'll start with you, Court, since you're more, you know, you're born and raised a Denver Nugget fan. Do you have a favorite Lakers-Nuggets rivalry memory?
Well, so the first thing I thought of was what you were just referring to back in 2009 when we made it to the Western Conference Finals, but I wouldn't call that a favorite memory. my mind immediately, for some reason, went to the Ty Lawson dunk over DJ Mbenga. Am I saying that right, Mbenga? I can't remember how you say his name.
But I believe it's actually DJ Mbangdon. He got dunked on so often.
I don't know if you remember that, but that kind of stands out in my mind as one of my favorite moments between the two teams.
Right, right. I mean, they've had an underratedly fun rivalry between the two, where, I mean, you had the whole Eagle-Colorado thing, and I think the more a fan base hates either the team or the player, the more fun the actual rivalry is. So it's been really cool. You know, those games, those Laker games out there in Denver especially, are pretty ridiculously hateful.
The thing you don't realize, though, Anthony, is that, you know, there's Laker fans in every part of the country.
Yeah.
And Nuggets fans, the fan base out here, you know, there's a passionate minority, I'll say. But whenever the Lakers come to town, it's 50% Laker fans all wearing their Kobe jerseys, talking trash. Can't name another player on the entire roster except for Kobe. But they fill up Pepsi Center whenever the Lakers are in town.
Same with the Bulls. They bring them out, too.
Yeah.
The Derek Hire. I mean, Adam, one of the things we spoke about out there in Vegas were, you know, fan bases that kind of rub us the wrong way. Are those Kobe fans? They have to rank up there as far as your least favorite fan bases, right?
Well, you know, I lived in L.A. This is an interesting question for me. I lived in L.A. for a couple years. I was in West L.A. right by UCLA. And Kobe was my favorite player, actually, from about 2004 to 2008-ish. Somewhere in that range. I always say that he was probably the most skilled player to ever play the game. Most just like technically skilled, best footwork mixed with best shooting, mixed with great passing, great defense. So there was a couple years in there where I really, really enjoyed it. Living in LA, you kind of get to know what a Laker fan is. And my, if I can just stereotype all Laker fans, I would say that the Laker fan is so passionate about Kobe, but doesn't know anything about the game of basketball or even their own Laker history or their Laker roster. They're just convinced that Kobe is God, and as long as he's on the team, they're the best in the league.
Yeah, I was considering calling the website and the podcast the Kobe Outsiders, but you know the longevity of that would have been called into question after this season.
I get it, man. He was fun to watch for a lot of years.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. I mean, I kind of tend to rub Lakers fans the wrong way. I just kind of got myself into some trouble recently on the account. I wouldn't say trouble, but I said that, you know, the reason a lot of Lakers fans hate LeBron is for being better than Kobe. And, boy, that pissed people off.
You're not going to make any friends doing that, Anthony. You're going to get your credential taken away. You're going to get your site banned.
Yeah, no, it didn't go over very well. Surprisingly, you know, I got the occasional "you're not a true Laker fan," because that's the voice they all speak in. By the way, I don't know if you noticed that, but Adam, do you have a favorite moment? I mean, as far as whether from either side, I guess being an entire NBA fan between the Nuggets and the Lakers.
I really don't have a favorite moment of that rivalry, and I don't even consider it a rivalry. And the reason
really?
Is. Well, yeah, because the reason is the Lakers were just better. It's always funny when you go back and think, oh, this series went six, or you know, it went seven, it was close. Sometimes that can be deceiving, right? And that 2009 series, I think, is deceiving. We had two inbound passes stolen that swung the game, but I don't think they swung the series. The better teams tend to win those series much more frequently than they give them away, and I just think that the Nuggets. You know, if they would have snuck one of those two games out, they would have blown another one. So I think that series went exactly how it was supposed to go.
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something. Like when people talk about the rivalry between the Lakers and the Clippers, it's like, what? Huh? They share a building. That's about it. You know.
Right.
It's tough. It's tough. I think with the Lakers, and I'm going to sound like an incredible homer here, but I think the only legitimate team that has an actual rivalry with the Lakers are the Celtics because they have similar levels of success in the NBA. The Spurs are also there, I would say.
The idea of a rivalry is also kind of a temporary idea, right? Like you had a rivalry with the Kings for several years, and that was an exciting rivalry, even though it had a beginning and end. It's not ongoing. The same thing with the Spurs. If you somehow get an 8 seed and you play the Spurs in the first round this year, that's not a rivalry. That's going to be an ass-whooping. So sometimes rivalries can have a beginning and end. The Celtics one is one that kind of spans decades, so it feels like an ongoing rivalry. But other than that, you have shorter rivalries that last a couple seasons.
And even to that point, right, Kurt? Like you can chime in here too. But with the Lakers and the Celtics rivalry, or you know when it waned there for a bit, you were getting MVP chance in the Garden for Kobe. I don't know if you remember that. But
no, I don't think I saw that.
I don't remember that either.
Actually, that actually took place when the Celtics were really, really, really bad. The Lakers fans were able to outnumber them, and Kobe was at the free throw line, and there was a short, I'd say about 5 second period before those Laker fans were all muffled away, where you got a few MVP chants. But you mentioned Carmelo Anthony, Adam, and Court, you can kind of pick up here too, but are we looking at it differently, the way we look at the two teams, if Carmelo was still there and the Nuggets stayed relevant, you know, in the period since then?
We'd be looking at them differently, yeah. We'd probably be the New York Knicks. Instead of, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think Carmelo a lot of time gets some unfair criticism, but I mean, he is who he is. I think he's hard to build a team around now in today's NBA. Yeah, I just think, like, I don't think he would have been the difference maker between us, you know, mm-hmm. in the being world we're at now, or yeah. being a legitimate contender. I just don't see that. In fact, there's a lot of people who believe that the 2012 Nuggets team was, I mean, they were statistically the best Nuggets team of all time because they won most games of any Nuggets team in history. But you know, they didn't have a superstar, kind of the faceless team, right? So a lot of people thought they were better than any team with the Nuggets or with Carmelo.
Right, right. Adam, I guess same question.
I think Court's right that it was actually the 2013 team, I believe, that had the 57 wins.
That's why I hate the NBA, because it's always
12-13.
But yeah.
Yeah, so that team actually had the best record, and I think if Carmelo was still here, we probably would be floating around in mediocrity still, making it to the first round, maybe the second. I don't know that it would have been a rivalry with the Lakers. The Lakers haven't really been relevant for about 4 years now. So
right.
So I don't know that two irrelevant teams can have a rivalry.
Although I'll say, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But one thing that comes to mind, and I think Adam and I have actually talked about this before, but I think there's the potential with Moutier and with Russell for there to be, I think they'll be tied together throughout their career because they were the best 2-point guards in the draft. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a potential there that, depending on their career trajectories, that maybe a rivalry could be reborn.
Well, there's actually, I think, already a rivalry between the two of them, and that was one of the interesting things talking to Moutier when he was drafted. He's mentioned Russell unprovoked a handful of times, and it's always been, you know, oh, well, I played against D'Angelo in high school. I played against him, and I thought I shut him down, and I thought I outplayed him at All-American game or this or that. And you can tell, not in like an arrogant way or an angry way, but you can tell it's a little thing with Moutier, at least, that, you know, going into freshman year of college, I was the better player. Now he's the higher draft pick, and I'm going to have to prove to you guys that I've always been better. So I think you're right. I think that'll be a rivalry that pops up here in the next coming years.
That's a perfect segue to the second topic we were going to talk about. It's impossible to not bring up Moutier and Russell when we're talking about the Lakers and Nuggets off seasons. I wish they were divisional guys, because then I believe they'd play each other slightly more often, right? It's like three versus four games. So that'd be, you know, in and of itself would make it a lot more fun. But the fact that I believe both guys, I don't think Russell has ever brought him up, but you can bet, you know, Moutier's comments have made their way to Russell.
Sure.
So I you know there are going to be a couple fireworks when the two guys face off, you know, the first time they play this season. Adam, what were your thoughts on Moutier during the summer league?
Well, I'm impressed. I mean, he's the guy I think that's the biggest mystery to most NBA fans. His Draft Express profile is even pretty spotty just because of his time in China. So checking him out at summer league was awesome. It was really my first introduction to him. He's incredibly poised, incredibly mature, incredibly intelligent, and incredibly strong. One of the things I haven't heard anybody mention, he's got Popeye forearms. It's kind of a unique. Some of the NBA players have really unique like physical features, either big hands or you know really long arms or this that. He's got Popeye arms, and the reason I bring that up is because so many times he drives to the basket, or at least in summer league, he'd drive to the basket and kind of just flick the ball. It wouldn't be an all-up wind, you know, toss. He'd just kind of flick it, and the ball would go 40 miles per hour all the way across court, hit the guy right in the, you know, right until he's ready to shoot. That's a skill I see LeBron do. I see John Wall do it. I see James Harden do it, Ginobili, some of those guys. He's got that, and I think that's an elite NBA skill. So I'm impressed with him. I think his offense is going to be there from day one other than his shooting. And then he's got all the tools physically to be a great defender. So I'm fully on board the Moutier bandwagon.
Yeah, make that too.
I thought I was going to have to carry a bucket of cold water with Adam as, you know, it's just in case Moutier just walked by us in the hallway. Like, I was a little worried about him.
Well, hey, man, I got no shame.
Yeah, well, people love him here. I mean, like people in Denver are desperate for someone to cling on to and someone to save the franchise. And he, you know, so far he fits the bill in terms of just, you know, his ability to demonstrate leadership while also excelling on the court. And honestly, at all times, he has the best court vision of anyone on the floor at all times, at least from what I've seen so far. And he makes passes that very few people in the NBA can make.
The other thing about him is and you might not know this from being outside of Denver, but, you know, we're a mid-sized market, small mid, but we have kind of the reputation around the NBA of nobody wanting to go there. A lot of people don't see the difference between Salt Lake City and Denver or Oklahoma City and Denver, you know, where it's pictured as this really boring, ugly town. And one of the things that has happened with the Nuggets this summer is that they've kind of gotten rid of the players that don't want to be here, and the guys that are here have really embraced the city. Chandler wrote basically a love letter on his Instagram to the city of Denver talking about what a great city it was, what a great organization the Nuggets are. Gallo did the same thing, called Denver one of the most beautiful cities he's ever seen. And then you got Moutier, who's rocking a Mutombo throwback jersey, which is just, you know, if you're from Denver, you know, Chauncey Billups is the guy, but Mutombo's the close second guy for Nuggets history.
And that juxtaposed with Ty Lawson wearing a Bulls jersey, right?
Couldn't be more opposite of each other, at least from what we know so far.
And you know, when you're talking about the young guys embracing the characteristics of a city, it is, you know, on both guys, with Moutier and Russell, I don't think either guy has any questions as to, you know, would they rather be anywhere else. And, yeah, Adam, there's a lot to be said about the value in that, you know, especially for a city like Denver, who, like you say, or where, like you say, has, you know, had that come into question occasionally. And with the Lakers, you know, right now, that's everybody's favorite story to write is how nobody wants to come to the Lakers anymore. You know, when you got these core foundational pieces, Randall came out and said today, living in L.A. is everything he's dreamed of and more. When you have those foundational cornerstone type guys saying the things that those guys are saying, and it feels genuine, which is also important. That just bodes well for both franchises.
Yeah, but that always happens with the Lakers. I mean, who doesn't want to live in L.A.? Has there ever been a draft pick that's been, you know, you're rich and famous, and you're living in the city of rich and famous people? That's a pretty good life right there.
Dwight Howard disagrees.
I don't think he hated L.A. I think he hated the guy yelling in his ear every day.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing with Howard, though, was that, you know, because even before they traded for him, he said that he didn't want to come to the Lakers. Like, I don't know if you read any of those rumors at all, but he said, like, flat out, I don't want to follow in Shaq's footsteps. I don't want to be in L.A., and I think he loves the scene, but I don't know if he necessarily ever bought fully into the Lakers' mystique that I think is important for people to buy into, even though I hate the combination of those two words, Lakers mystique. Yeah. So, you know, talking about the rest of the off seasons, it sounds like you're completely on board, obviously, with Moutier. You mentioned Ty Lawson. We also both, you know, all three of us talked about the direction both franchises are going in. I would say for both organizations, it was a pretty plus, net plus off season, right, Court?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and Adam can attest to this, but I was you know, kind of having endured the most painful season of my entire, like, being as a Nuggets fan, I kind of entered the off season with a bit of I was a bit jaded, and I was a bit like almost angry at the lack of direction I felt they were going. And it wasn't until Wilson Chandler penned that kind of that love letter that Adam mentioned to the city of Denver that kind of took a step back and started thinking about, you know, how this is exactly the type of people we need to stay here. We need people like Chandler. We need people like Gallo who actually want to be in the city, want to play for this franchise, and are pretty solid professional players, right? I mean, they're solid pros. So locking them down for, like, what a relatively small deal and, you know, chump change in a couple of years.
Yeah, and then that's a big one.
Even bringing back someone like Jameer Nelson to mentor Moutier was a big win for us, too.
100%. You know, fan psychology is interesting to me because, you know, you look at a team like Philadelphia, and I'm kind of surprised. I wrote about this on Twitter a little bit today. I'm kind of surprised at how much people have Philadelphia fans have embraced this tank that they're in. And I think it's because when you know the direction that your team's going, you have a little bit of buy-in. And with the Nuggets, for the last 2 years, nobody's really known the direction. We picked up stopgap players like J.J. Hickson, Nate Robinson, guys that aren't that great, but they're not that bad. So you end up sticking them in the roster. Nuggets fans think, okay, maybe we'll be an 8 seed. Things go south. So the Nuggets psychology, the fan psychology in Denver has been, you know, just disappointment after disappointment and wondering where we're going. So this next year, we're probably going to have the same record that we did last year, but it's going to be 10 times more enjoyable because people know they can at least see the process ahead. And maybe you feel the same thing for the Lakers, is that you kind of can start to see the blueprint a little bit with which direction the Lakers are going post-Kobe.
Right. That's the big one that I think. Would you guys agree? I believe that today's NBA fan, the general NBA fan, is smarter than any point in NBA history. And in being interested in the transaction and, you know, you talk about franchise direction and all that stuff, I think right now this current generation of NBA fan picks that up better than any other, right?
I would agree, but I would agree. Only say this. The reason I agree is because I live inside of a bubble, right? Like, I don't have a lot of NBA fans here in Denver that are my friends from growing up or from college or this or that. A lot of the people I talk hoops with are online. Right. So I live in this bubble of people that are smart and passionate and know the ins and outs of the CBA, and they know, you know, all the finer points of how things work. But I don't know. I'm a little bit out of touch, I guess, with just the everyday man.
Right, and I mean, I'll represent that on your timeline. just a bunch of bad jokes and the occasional lashing out at the organization. That's basically the Anthony Irwin experience. But I would say this. I do have a bunch of friends and family and such that ask me questions. You know, they know what I do and what I hope to continue to do forever. And the questions that they ask catch me off guard. You know, hey, do we still have the biannual, or do they have this exception? Do they have this exception to use? What could, you know, what's a decent rate for this player? And it's a relatively, you know, you would think, unknown player.
Right.
And to me, that represents that, wow, like, all right, I can have a conversation with this person that may not be what I experienced in Vegas, but for the most part, I mean, Corp, of the three of us, you probably have by far the most followers. You get to deal with the layman more often than either of us. What would you say about that?
This whole time you're talking about the casual fan, I just kept thinking about my wife asking me who's sporting tonight. So like, I just couldn't get past that in my head. No, I think there's a... You know, I don't know. It's probably just maybe it's because of just the mass, like the just the sheer amount of exposure that people are getting to all sports now through social media, just through television or whatever. Being able to record games, I don't think it's just limited to NBA. I think people are just smarter fans in general.
I think it's that, and I think it's also a product of one of my favorite Dan Le Batard lines where. The transaction has taken the place of the actual action in terms of what people are really interested in. mean, there were record numbers people watching the lottery this season because you had the Lakers and the Knicks atop there. You know, we don't know where they're going to go. And that has, you know, it was, sure, it was right before an NBA Finals game. But then you tune into the draft and you had, you know, more record numbers watching that as well. And then the amount of people that follow Adrian Wojnarowski, knowing that he's going to provide them with the inside scoop on the immediate transactions that take place in the NBA, that's interesting to me that, you know, that's kind of where following sports has gone. The rest of the offseason, though, just kind of put a wrap on this. I mean, I could talk about what the Lakers have done from an outsider's perspective on the Outsiders podcast. How would you guys talk about what the Lakers did, you know, this season in terms of if the two teams were to play right now, who would you take? That's a fair way to go about this. Because I think there are similar stations.
Yeah. I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago talking about how I actually really liked the Lakers offseason.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. That was really good.
Yeah, and I kind of compare it. It's very similar to what the Knicks are doing in that they're not making, like, they're not going out and getting the flashy free agents, but they're making pretty, like, smart basketball decisions in terms of who they're bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're bringing in real-life, actual NBA bench players, right? Like, right. Having Lou Williams come off your bench or having Roy Hibbert as your rim protectors, they're legitimate players, so.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not prohibiting anything going forward. They're not burdening themselves with too much salary.
Mm-hmm.
But I happen to think that the Nuggets may actually be like one of the worst teams in the NBA record wise this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably lean towards taking the Lakers in a head to head match.
Uh-huh.
For a variety of reasons, like. I'm also crazy excited about watching Julius Randle play.
Yeah,
I think he can be one of the kind of the breakout players of this year.
I sure hope so.
But I think the Lakers probably are in a little bit more advanced there right now.
Adam, would you agree there?
I don't know. Well, I probably would have before I found out Tariq Black is only 6'9". Now I don't know what to do. Well, he was 6'11 until today, right? Today he's officially 6'9". No,
I hate when that happens.
Here's what I'd say. I think that the Lakers might have a slight edge in talent, but I actually think the Nuggets will be competitive. And here's why. The Lakers have a lot of guys that have one or two really good skills, and they have one or two really big flaws. And I don't trust Byron Scott to be able to highlight the best of those players and kind of hide the worst of them. For example, right. I mean, obviously Kobe right now doesn't have it from judging on what we've seen of him the last 2 years, he doesn't have it defensively. He doesn't have the strength and energy and conditioning to be able to play, you know, all out on both ends of the court. So he takes a lot of possessions off on offense. He takes a lot of on defense. He settles for jumpers when he shouldn't on offense. I don't know that Byron Scott's going to be able to break him from that now that he's a year older and through another injury. Roy Hibbert, you know, is a phenomenal defender, especially help side defender, but he's got a lot of flaws, especially offensively. Do you really feel that Coach Scott's going to be able to bring out the best in him? Then you got Julius Randle, who I'm actually also excited about. A lot of people I really respect are down on him. He's a guy I've always liked his skill set. So I'm curious to see, but this is basically his rookie season. Rookies are always terrible. He has no exposure. I mean, he has 10 minutes of exposure to NBA speed. So I expect him to really be bad this year just from a productivity standpoint. And the same thing goes for Russell. Lou Williams is another guy. He's a chucker. You know, do you really expect Coach Scott to be able to get the most out of him? So on the other hand, you have the Nuggets who are in a lot of the same boat. I think Gallo's an underrated player. I think Wilson Chandler's an underrated player. Jameer Nelson's a really solid player. And then they're full of a bunch of rookies and guys that don't have a lot of minutes too, but I do trust Coach Malone. I think that one of the things he is good at is understanding player strengths and weaknesses and playing off of those. So I think the Lakers might have a slight edge in talent, but I expect the Nuggets to be as productive, if not more.
Yeah, I think both teams head into the season with more questions than answers, right? I mean, there's the direction aspect, which is always fun. We talked about that pretty much at length at this point. But like you mentioned, both teams, they have a couple guys that people are really interested in watching. But aside from that, they don't have any, you know, bona fide, you know exactly what they are kinds of guys, right? I don't think that I can't think of any of those. Because of injuries or whatever other reasons, playing style, whatever, I can't think of any bona fide NBA guys that I know exactly what I'm going to get from them heading into this season.
You know what you're going to get from Nick Young. Come on.
That's a good point. We already. I don't know if you've seen his haircut, his new hairstyle, but
no.
Please, Nick, please cut that off before. I'm not even one who usually dabbles in that. You know, that side of basketball or sports period, but
style.
Yeah, but Nick, that's just not a good look, buddy. That's not a good look.
I just looked it up, and it's inspired by Booty Call, the movie with Jamie Foxx.
Thank you. He's Jamie Foxx.
And the only other thing I'll say about the Lakers is, one, you have Jordan Clarkson, who looked like the best player in summer league, maybe Marcus Smart, but those two guys look clearly like they were in a class all themselves. He might be, I don't know if that'll translate. His skill set is the type of skill set that can dominate at summer league that might not necessarily dominate at a faster paced league like the regular season NBA. But the other thing I'll say is I'm not sure that that Byron Scott's Princeton offense that he's trying to run, I don't know that that works when you have, I mean, the Princeton offense is an offense that spreads the ball and moves it, right? There's very little dribbling, lots of passing, no holding. You've got Lou Williams. You've got Kobe Bryant. You've got Nick Young. You've got D'Angelo Russell. All these guys like to catch the ball and read the defense, make decisions. To me, that's the opposite of the Princeton. So I can see, as much as there's some talent there, I can see it being a little bit combustible.
I'll say this about the Princeton, and this is something that Gary Kester from the site has brought up a couple times. It'll take about 3 or 4 trips down the court on offense for Kobe to say, this system sucks. We are not running this anymore. this is not going to work. That was probably the most frustrating aspect of Summer League, aside from Tarik Black just fouling anybody and everybody he could get a hold of. But this print, you know, the team is built to run. You know, could you just picture how much more fun this Lakers team would be with Mike D'Antoni as the coach?
Like, there's Carl.
Or George Karl, any of those guys.
Anthony, you have got to be every Lakers fan's worst nightmare here, talking about LeBron, talking about Mike D'Antoni. This is I can't even imagine the hell that you take every day from your fan base.
You know, I'm gonna have to start retweeting like funny comments that I get back at me, just because they can be pretty comical. I'm watching these guys play, and Clarkson, uber athlete. D'Angelo Russell, not a great athlete, but supreme, you know, court reader. You had Julius Randle, who can go coast to coast with the best of them. And they're out there just slowing the ball down, running 15 seconds per possession, and you're just sitting there like, guys, you guys should be killing these guys, but the Princeton's keeping everybody in these games. I forget who said it, but he was like, the Princeton offense is great for future accountants, but in the NBA, it's not what I want to see.
Right.
So, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. We talked a little bit about Carmelo, who is kind of, I think at this point, is a better player while playing the stretch four or the pinch post or whatever. Byron Scott, a little earlier today, made a few headlines talking about, you know, one, Kobe being Bryant, who he envisions playing some power forward. We were all laughing about this before we started the podcast. Adam, do you just want to just like laugh for about 5 seconds and then we can actually cover the topic?
Hey, man, I'll tell you what. It's going to make him a lot more interesting, I think, for all the wrong reasons. But heck, I want to see Kobe at power forward. I want to see Kobe at center. it'll make for some fascinating basketball where I think the Lakers – play it for 5 minutes and get outscored 20-5.
Yeah. I can't even. Court, go ahead. This is
Byron. I got I guess I didn't even realize that Byron knew what a stretch four was, so there's that.
I think he's pretty sure stretch four is one of the Fantastic Four characters that we're going to see this Friday.
Can you have a stretch four if you don't like to shoot threes? is he just like 2 feet in front of the three-point line stretching the defense?
No, he shoots. All of his three-pointers are going to come with one toe on the line. It's the Derek Fisher you know, specialty. Given how small the NBA is going and given how much Byron Scott enjoys to make the occasional quote, I can kind of see where this came from. But please, Byron, just save us all the trouble and you don't even have to experiment with that. They have three guys that you could run at the stretch for more effectively than Kobe. I guess that's all we can really say on the topic, right? Other than Byron being an idiot.
I don't know where to go with that one.
It's shrug emoji. Like, that's all we should have done, is I should have just drawn out the shrug emoji and just moved on. Lastly, before we get out of here, we're going to widen our scope. We've all written about the NBA at large to some extent, you know, whether it was Court and I at Rant Sports, Court, you're currently doing so with Fan Rag. Adam, you're doing so with Hardwood Paroxysm and Nylon Calculus. So we're right smack dab in the middle of where nothing is going on in the NBA, so why not talk about who won the offseason? That'll be the question, you know, one, and then question 1A will be, does it matter in the grand scheme of things this season? So, Adam, I'll go ahead and let you start. Who had the most impressive offseason, would you say, of everybody in the NBA?
Yeah, it's a little tricky to say who had the most impressive one. I guess I'll save my thought for the second half of this, but obviously San Antonio made an interesting splash. I'm actually of the opinion that they're not going to be as productive as people think. That's a team that's been together for 16 years, pretty much as assembled. They've moved the pieces on the outside around. LaMarcus Aldridge will be their best player next year. That's the first time they've added a new piece that's the best player on the team, so he or Kawhi. But so I think they're actually going to struggle, plus they lost some depth. I think the Rockets have a steal with Ty Lawson. I don't think that you can play a lot of minutes with Lawson and Harden at the same time, but I think staggering them is going to keep Harden healthy, going to keep him rested and make him more productive. So I think on top of that Houston team was a 3 seed last year despite getting – you know, losing huge moments from Dwight, losing games to Monte Yunus, who's one of my favorite players in the entire league. So I think if you had to give one team that won, you know, it might be them, just because I think that they're a legitimate contender, where I haven't thought that until they got Ty Lawson.
Court?
Yeah. I was actually thinking, I think the Los Angeles Clippers did I think they won the offseason to me.
By not losing DeAndre?
Well, that's a big part of it, but you know, this is a team that was up 3-1 against those Rockets right in the semis, and had they had any sort of bench depth, I just can't help but think that they could win one of those final games and move on to the Western Conference Finals. And so that, you know, I'm not a huge Lance Stevenson or Josh Smith guy, but they're guys with NBA like NBA bodies and questionable skill sets, but they're competent enough to eat minutes, right? Josh Smith won one of the games single-handedly almost. But so, you know,
beat him, join him.
Yeah, so adding Prigioni is an underrated move to give Chris Paul some backup. But I like what they did to address their bench needs. Bringing in Paul Pierce is huge. I think we'll see some big shots from him all year long.
Do they have a backup five, though? That's what I'm wondering. Off the top of my head, I would say no, right? They traded away Spencer Hawes, and Doc would do whatever he could possibly do to not play whoever was behind DeAndre last year.
Yeah, they got Cole Aldridge.
Oh, that's right.
take that for what you will, but you know, I think he showed at times in New York that he, you know, he can eat up minutes too.
Yeah, he's six fouls, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how I used to look at guys, you know, when they would play against Shaq in the playoffs, where, you know, you just get as many tall 7-footers as you could who could stop Shaq from just dunking on everybody. And I think that's what they're hoping from Aldridge.
Yeah, I agree.
Obviously, without Shaq. Anybody else? You know, we haven't even spoken about the Eastern Conference. Has anybody done anything in the East that would make you say it's not LeBron coming out of that conference?
Absolutely not from my end. I think that's a one-team conference. There's some teams that are really interesting and have a future, but that future isn't a 2015-16 future. That's beyond. So I think next year you have a lot of teams that are interesting. Washington will be interesting to watch. The Bulls, they got my favorite coaching prospect in Fred Hoiberg, who I think will be a very good coach for them. But are they going to be better than they were last year? I don't think so. It's going to be pretty identical. You have some teams that are up and coming, but nobody that I think is going to be a threat, even close to a threat, to Cleveland this year.
I agree with that. I actually think two teams that I want to keep your eye on in the Eastern Conference are Indiana and Miami.
I was just going to say Miami.
Miami, you know, they're able to bring back a lot of their pieces, and the big thing with them is always if they can stay healthy, right? I think they have one of the better starting fives in the East. Added a little bit of bench depth. I like Green as just kind of a role player to add some instant offense.
Amari played well to end the season too last year. Amari Stoudemire did, I believe.
Yeah, he did. And apparently today he said that he's better than Chris Bosh, which I just saw that somewhere on Twitter, and I didn't get all the details. But
I saw that right before we started.
I think the right coach, I mean, he's old now, and it's hard to even know. It's hard to take anything from the last handful of seasons from him. But he's a guy whose skill set, I think, if healthy and 100%, can actually be more productive than people realize. Like I said, I'm not counting on it just because he hasn't been healthy and productive for so long. But I still think Spo's an excellent coach, and I'm curious to see what they can do with him.
Yeah, I don't know if I would – I agree completely that the conference is the Cavs to be lost. That's not even within question, I would say. But I really want to see that Miami-Cleveland series take place. Like that – the NBA needs that, you know, just so that storyline can come full circle and both fan bases aren't particularly fond of each other. And you have Dwayne Wade, who, you know, could play the role of the scorn lover. That'd be so much more, or spurn lover. I'm not sure why I said scorn, but spurn.
We know what you mean.
Right. That he could, you know, if he could play spoiler to LeBron's, you know, hometown hero story, I'm sure he'd love to do that. I think that game goes at least six. Would you be willing to go that far, Adam?
I don't know. I mean, probably not, to be honest with you. That Cleveland team is really good. They learned a lot last year. If you look at the Heat in 2011 to 2012, their second year together, they really turned it on and became a great team in that second season. I think the same thing is going to happen with the Cavs this year. They've come together a little bit. They learned a lot about themselves in the playoffs. I think we're going to see a 65-win team out of them in a week East.
Court, do you think we'll see over or under five letters from the Cavs to the Players Tribune this season?
I'm not sure I follow that story. What I mean?
Oh, they've if you go through their entire like history, you have Kevin Love, who's written two Players Tribune letters.
He's a partial owner in the company, though.
Right. Oh, yeah. He's a senior editor, right? He's a senior editor. So we've all been trying to write for going on however many years we've been writing combined. And this guy's a senior freaking editor with a ghostwriter.
We need to start the Bloggers Tribune or something.
this is exactly why I love the NBA. It's like I follow the NBA closer than anyone, and here's a story I've never even heard about. It's amazing. Yeah.
That's how it goes. So then, you know, question 1A to this ending segment, does it all matter? We already talked about, you know, Cleveland's still probably the favorite to come out of the East. We already mentioned how the Spurs, we didn't mention Golden State, so I guess that's a good place to pick up. Court, did anybody do anything to leapfrog the Warriors?
Oh, I don't know. That Warriors team is so good, and they literally brought back everyone. You know, I'd say one team to keep my eye, that I'll keep my eye on is probably the Thunder, just because they're, you know, assuming they can get Durant back healthy, that they're just so immensely talented. And you know, they have enough depth and big men to counter anything that the Warriors throw at them. So I don't know. I just think if anyone can overtake them, I think it'll be the Thunder.
Adam, same question. Would you still put your money on Golden State, or did anybody do anything to change your mind?
The funny thing is, the Golden State won 67 games last year. They had a plus 10.5 plus minus differential average for the season. They beat the heck out of everybody in the playoffs. I know the Cavs snuck two wins out, but they still look like the dominant team in almost every single game. And yet they're still underrated.
So, it's crazy.
It's ridiculous how people look at this team. Well, they got a lot of breaks. They didn't have to play the Spurs, or they didn't have to play Oklahoma City, or this, that. This
they were
team
fully
was
healthy.
67 games.
Right.
So no, I think some teams made some great moves, some interesting moves, got better. I actually agree with Court. The only team that I think has a chance against them, assuming health again, you know, the Warriors do have to keep their depth is part of what makes them so great, and their versatility. So they do need to maintain some type of health heading into the playoffs. But assuming that, I do think the Thunder are the only team that would be an interesting matchup for them. And that's just because of the talent of Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka to a certain extent. Their defense is so on a string and so on point and so great, but there's no defense for Durant. He just scores. He just shoots over you. He makes a little move and he shoots. So that would be the only one that I would say, hey, they have a puncher's chance. But other than that, I think I can't see a team beating the Warriors in 2015-16, assuming they're healthy.
Yeah, I always laugh at the way we rate teams. You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the whole soft dynamic, that because they make, you know, they score so much via the three, that people think of them as somehow a non-strong team offensively. And then also, you know, how they kind of toiled in that series against Cleveland until the very end when they figured out, you know, hey, we should probably play Andre Iguodala more. Then, you know, then they kind of blew the doors off of Cleveland. But yeah, I think 538 had them as the best team of all time statistically that last season, right? When they crunched all the numbers.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far, you know, as to say that, but they definitely are a unique team, and they're unique in that their ability to shoot threes. They're unique at their ability to get to the basket, play small, play big, their versatility, number one offense or number one defense, number two offense. I mean, this team is ridiculous. If they're not the best team of all time, they're in the conversation. They're in the top five, top ten teams of all time. And I think it'll be this next season that people finally realize that and people start to say, heck, this Warriors team is, you know, has the makings of a dynasty.
You're preaching to the choir when we're talking about, you know, pulling apart that actual list. None of the Showtime Lakers were in the top ten there, to which I say, if your stats tell you that none of those teams were in the top 10 ever for the NBA, you need to go rethink your stats. The way you're crunching numbers isn't quite, you know, compiling properly. Court, so do you have any, you know, final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just watching the Hardwood Classic game between the Kings and the Lakers. I think it was that 2001. Game
is that one? Is it game? Which one is it? Because there's game seven, which everybody hates. Everybody but Lakers fans hate that game. Yeah, that was the rigged one. And then game six was the one where Robert Horry sunk the three pointer.
It's actually game one. I don't remember this one.
Whoa, that one! I think the Kings won that one, if I'm not mistaken.
Anyway, sorry. Oh.
Well, either the Kings won or the Lakers pulled it out in overtime in Sacramento.
I'll let you know what happens.
Spoiler alert.
This is what my life's become. NBA Twitter's really become a ghost town.
Oh, man. There's
nothing to watch. Like, I'm watching old games on like Hardwood Classics every night. That's kind of what I'm up to.
Right. I completely agree. I wish they would televise the, I don't know if you guys have heard of it out there in Denver, but the Drew League games that are going on right now in Los Angeles, those should be televised. That's way more interesting than baseball.
There's a market for that. I mean, I don't know. It's going to take the right businessman, but there's a market for filling this two-month void that all NBA junkies like us have. that's giving some kind of content like the Drew League would be a perfect candidate for that.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. That'd be a lot of fun. So on that note, I'm going to go ahead and get ready to sign off here shortly. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming on, and thank you very much, Court, for coming on. Do you guys have anything to plug before we get out of here? Anything coming down the pike?
Nope. Follow me on Twitter at Adam_Mattes. Or like I said, check out Nylon Calculus, Hardwood Paroxysm, and Denver Stiffs whenever you want to catch some national or Nuggets news.
Same thing, Court. Anything for you to plug and anything that you're working on immediately?
Yeah. Follow me backwards there on Twitter. Really just trying to fill the void of the summer, trying to come up with any creative articles I can to put out there on FanRag or today's Fast Break. So I may be stretching for content, but watch out anyway.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of top five Lakers moments of all times that are out there right now. Clickbait. All right, guys. Well, thank you guys very much for signing on. If I can find my mouse, I will get this thing off of the air. There it is. All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks.